Hello and welcome to this episode of PaleoCast. I'm Laura Soule.
And I'm Dave Marshall.
And in this episode, it's Dave's turn to be the interviewee, which will be a bit strange. How have you found the prep for this, Dave?
It's been horrendous. I'm very nervous, actually.
Finally, the tables have turned.
Yeah, I know. But it was only a matter of time until I abused this position, this forum, this platform.
Yeah, I'm surprised you haven't done it before, to be honest.
Yeah, I could have bored everyone with chasmotaspidids, but I think this is something that's really worthwhile talking about, so.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about the Virtual Natural History Museum project that PaleoCast are running, setting up, beginning. Mm-hmm. So Dave has really been the main driver behind this project, but the rest of us are sort of helping out when we can.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to ask Dave lots of questions about the project. It might get a bit awkward.
It's already a bit awkward, don't worry.
All right, should we start?
Let's start.
Okay, so most obvious question, what is the Virtual Natural History Museum?
So, it's a difficult question to answer because it's pretty big in terms of its scope. I'll start off by telling you how it came around. If you've been on our website, you may have noticed there's a section called Paleo 101, and this is a project that we started right at the very start of PaleoCast back in 2012. And it was a project that would bring together paleontologists and teachers and make it so that teachers have multimedia resources to be able to use in their classrooms. And the project has really evolved since then. So what it was going to be was just a list of all the points of the national curriculum, starting off with the UK, and then just a gallery of multimedia for teachers to find and use in the classrooms. But now the scope's completely changed. What we're having in the Virtual Natural History Museum, well, it's going to be a virtual natural history museum. We're actually going to build a museum. And that's so that anyone can enjoy it, because I think that paleontological multimedia is something that can be enjoyed by anyone, really. It doesn't have to be just teachers and students that use this. It is for everyone now. And then second, there's really, it's just the scope of it. There's so much more that we're going to add in now. It was before, it was just a few pictures and images, but now it's just everything that we can get our hands on. We're going to try and build a faithful representation of an actual natural history museum.
So it'll look like an actual natural history museum,
yeah,
as well.
It'll look, well, it, yeah, won't look exactly like it. It'll be a representation of one, but we'll get to what it'll look like in a bit.
So it'll still be useful for the people it was originally intended for, so kind of teachers and everything, but now hopefully it will have a much wider audience.
Yeah, it's all about entertainment, really. I want this website to be incredibly entertaining for anyone to use, but at the same time, to be useful, to be educational, and to be able to be used as a teaching resource, not just something for fun.
Great. So we're saying website, it will all be online?
Yep. So it's just going to be inside of your web browser. It's nothing that you've got to download. You don't have to download any software. You don't have to install anything. You don't have to pay for anything. You'll just go on the website and there it is, pings up a virtual natural history museum, and you've got your little character, your little avatar that you walk around the museum, go have a look at all the exhibits, and it should just work in everyone's browser just straight off.
Cool. So I suppose there are some obvious benefits to having a museum online, but why do this when we've got plenty of real museums already?
Well, there's a lot of benefits that you can get from having it online opposed to having a physical museum. And one of the first things that comes to mind is just the size of the museum that we can build. So in the real world, you're limited to the number of things that you can put on display in your museum, because you actually have to put it out in display cabinets. But online, we can put anything on display that we want. So the virtual museum is completely limitless in size. We can add rooms, we can change content really quickly. There's anything that we can put into it. And so, as I said, we could like have special exhibits. One month we could have an exhibit on tyrannosaurs, for example. The next month we can have an exhibit on the Great Oxidation Event. So it'll always be changing. There's no cost involved in upkeep of the museum, in producing displays and changing them or anything like that. We can just do that just straight away. So that's one of the real benefits. And then there's other things such as operational costs. So there's no maintenance or staff costs. So yeah, we're not getting paid. So there's no entry fees or advertisements or anything like that. So that's another thing. There's no closing times. There's no opening times. We won't shut for Christmas. So yeah,
I guess that's good for a global audience as well.
Yeah, so exactly.
We can all be asleep in the UK and they can visit the museum in Australia.
Mm-hmm. And so that really just sums it up. If you have the internet, you're able to visit this museum. It's completely all inclusive. So, for example, if you lived somewhere like in the Outer Hebrides of Scotland, it's a million miles away from anything. You're on a little island. It'd take you the best part of a day to travel to your nearest museum. And so it brings the museum to you. And then there's other benefits as well. Say, like, if you wanted to see, as I did, the holotype of Weinbergina Rapitzi, you'd have to go all the way to Germany to see that, into Frankfurt. And that's going to take a day to get there. But the virtual museum will bring that to you. You don't have to go all around the world to visit all the best specimens. They come to you.
So this will be useful for researchers as well?
Yeah, yeah. And it's really built around the way that museums have tried to make their material available for researchers. So the way that I'll have to explain this is first by telling you what museums are. So you have the public front of the museum, you have the display area where they show you some of their exhibits and specimens and whatnot and do the education bit. But museums are also, I like to think of them as like libraries for artifacts. They conserve, they preserve, they keep safe artifacts. And if you're a researcher, you can go to the museum and say, please, can I look at whichever specimen, and then you can examine that for your research. So they don't display all of the specimens that they actually have in their possession. It's just really a fraction of the number of specimens that they have that they'll have on display. So what museums have started to do recently is digitize a lot of their collections. So they'll take pictures and build up online catalogs of the material that they have. So me as a researcher, what I'll do is, if I want to see a specimen in particular, I'll go onto the museum's website, go onto their online catalogue and have a look at the pictures and some of the specimen information that's included with that. And then I can, if I really want to go and have a look at it, I can go and travel to the actual museum and see the real thing. So you can do a lot of research without actually having to visit the museum now, which is a really good thing. And so the virtual museum that we're going to have is relying on the online data of museums, and it's going to use the images and 3D models, videos, any kind of multimedia that the museums have of their specimens and all of the additional information such as age, locality, lithology, all of that stuff. And we're going to import that into the museum and put it on display for everyone to see. So this material already exists online, but it's pretty hard to find. So if you're not a researcher, you may not actually know of the existence of all of this material on these websites. So say, like, if I wanted to have a look at some of the fossils in the British Geological Survey, the BGS, I'd have to log onto the website, and then it's maybe like 4 or 5 clicks before you actually find the search tool to look at the catalog. And so it's, if you don't know about it, it's very hard to find. And so it's got no public use, really. There's no engagement in it. It's just a searchable database. And so we're going to make it public friendly. We're going to use all of that information and present it in something that's fun.
So we'll make it more easily accessible for everybody, and also be bringing together lots of different collections that wouldn't necessarily be linked or kind of obvious from one another into the same place.
Exactly. So if, for example, you've got, let's use Archaeopteryx, you've got all the specimens in Germany, you'd have to go over and see those. You've got the London specimen, you've got the Berlin specimen, you've got all of that. We could bring that all into the one place so that you don't have to go in between museums looking at all the different things, comparing and contrasting. It's all brought together to you.
So are we working together with these museums, or are we just linking to their catalogs?
We're just going to steal it.
Yeah.
No. So there are museums that we have been talking to, mainly in the UK, and we are going to work with those to use their catalogs. So the ones that we're really getting on with the British Geological Survey, and they've got around 30,000 digitized specimens, but they don't have any public front to their museum. It's a weird one. It's a museum without a public museum. So basically, right, it's just a collection. And Mike Howe, the head of the BGS, the paleo there, he said, so I've got his quote written down. Whilst the collections of the BGS are excellent for reference, they are not really suited to browsing and education. And this, I believe, this is exactly where the Virtual Natural History Museum comes in. By linking to our web services, they will be able to use our images and metadata in their more accessible and public-friendly displays. We'd like to provide such a facility, but it's outside the remit and beyond our resources. We see the close collaboration with the Virtual Natural History Museum as an ideal win-win situation of great public benefits, and we are very happy to support it. So the museums are on board. And then a lot of museums, if you have a look at some of the collections worldwide, they have their collections which are licensed for public use, just attribution licenses. So you're allowed to use all of this material, just so long as you say that it came from the Smithsonian Museum, for example.
Right. And as well, we're not really using it, we're sort of pointing people to it anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So we don't take the images from the museums and keep it ourselves. We link to it.
Okay, so we've got all the catalog specimens and all this information. But you mentioned there's going to be a lot of multimedia stuff as well. Where is all that coming from?
Yeah, so it's not just the images. There's some collections. Again, we'll use the BGS. They spearheaded the 3D GB3D project, which is to make 3D models of a lot of their specimens. So we can use videos, we can use interactive models that you can rotate and look at. And then there's also other things that we can bring in as well. There's a lot of videos on YouTube that we can link to. There's audio stuff. It's kind of like PaleoCast and other paleontology podcasts that we could bring in. Any kind of paleontological multimedia that is licensed for public use, we're going to import it. And so you're going to be able to view everything all in the same place.
Okay, great. So we've got all of these resources in the same place, but obviously it's going to be a bit different to a regular museum because you can't actually see the physical objects. Is that going to cause any kind of problem? Like, what's going to be the difference there?
The main benefit of a museum is that you get to see specimens like right in front of you. You're able to understand the 3D object a lot easier, I think. So if you're just looking at a 2D object, say like the photographs that we're going to get from the museums, then it's not quite as easy to understand the morphology of the specimens. But then we've got things like 3D models that you can rotate. You can even print them off if you've got a 3D printer, which I'm sure everyone has at home.
Yep.
Yeah. But then when you actually think about what you can do at a museum, you can't touch the specimens. They're all behind glass cases. I mean, you can only look at things. And so when you think about it, it's not really that much difference.
So I guess for people who wouldn't be able to travel to these museums necessarily anyway, it's certainly a really good option. And then I guess there's some specimens that maybe researchers definitely need to go look at in person, but this will be a really good tool for them to figure out which those are, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't envision that it's going to replace going to the museum's website for the researchers. This is just something that we're going to, it's going to be fun for the public to use and explore the collections of different museums, explore the world's paleontology collection, really.
Yeah, rather than just the museums that you live very close to.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. So I've already said that we want it to be as accurate a representation of a real museum as possible. What's this actually going to look like on the screen?
Okay, so it's not going to be first person and 3D and all latest graphics. It's going to look like pretty old computer game graphics. But I really, really like that style. So if you imagine Pokemon, this was a design brief to make something that looks like Pokemon. Because I think that, well, there's a lot of reasons for doing this. First of all, it's quicker and cheaper to make. The graphics, they're going to be old. They're going to be some feedback that we got when we were applying for funds for this was, hey, why don't you use the latest graphics? What you're suggesting is really old and doesn't look as good. And so some people might not enjoy them. But I feel that if you go for the latest generation graphics, that can date really, really quickly. So the latest game out is Star Wars Battlefront, and that is amazing. It looks absolutely beautiful. All the snow on Hoth and when you're running around there shooting lasers, it's beautiful. But in 5 years' time, it's not going to look as good. But then if you go back to games such as Pokemon or Mario, they still look great. And that is because it's a style rather than the latest graphics. So it's old and so therefore will never go out of date. It's going to be using pixels. It's going to be kind of like 16-bit era for those people who know about computer games.
So you have a little figure in front of you and kind of a... It's sort of like a map really laid out in front and you can walk forwards and backwards, side to side, walk up to things and interact with stuff. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. You're using a little person. You run around the museum just with your mouse. You click on where you want to go. Your little man runs to it and goes and has a look at all the displays. So kind of like you would do in a real museum, just you've got a top-down view. You're running your little person off to go and have a look at the stuff.
And who's creating all of this for us?
Well, this is the lovely thing. So I, first of all, when I was planning this, I went and spoke to some pixel artists and they really had no idea what was going on. They had this paleontologist asking them if they could like create a museum. But speaking around, I managed to find someone actually in Bristol who does pixel art and game design. And she's got an MSc in paleobiology. So she knows about paleontology and is going to create some accurate drawings for us, even though they're in pixel form. We're going to get our artwork done by a paleontologist.
So I think I've seen a Triceratops, is that right?
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really awesome.
And we've got some of the images up on the website now. We've got all of the details about the Virtual Natural History Museum on there, so you can have a look over all of the details and also see some of the images that Claire's created.
Have you put Little Dave up?
Little Dave, we've got a pixel Little Dave, and this is the biggest thing for me. I mean, it'd be beautiful to create a website that's able to really bring paleontology to the people. But for me, the most important thing is having a little computer game version of myself. That's a life's goal right there, to have my own, have to have me in a computer game. How amazing is that?
Got some other cool characters in there as well, don't we?
Yeah, so things that are going to be inside of the museum, it's going to be populated. So it's not just you in an empty museum running around. There's going to be other people in there. Other users are going to be running around the museum at the same time. There's going to be a chat bar. You can talk to people about all the stuff and go and interact with them. But then additionally, we're going to have staff as well. There's going to be non-playable characters that are running around, little AIs, and we can have staff point you in the right direction, tell you about stuff. And then also we can have historical characters and other paleontologists. We can actually have, say, like a Simon Conway Morris. I don't know if he'd be into this. I haven't asked him yet. But we could potentially have Simon Conway Morris just stood around in the Cambrian telling you all about his research. We could have Darwin. We could bring Darwin back from the dead. Again, I haven't asked and I don't know if he'd be okay with this. But it's possible to go and talk to all of these characters about their research, which makes it a little bit different from what you'd get in a regular museum.
Yeah. So we'll have the little characters running around and you'll be able to see other users when they're doing it. What else is actually going to be inside the museum?
This is my favorite bit of the whole project, just coming up with different things that we're going to have inside of the museum. So start off, first of all, just copying a natural museum. What do they have inside of there? Well, they've got all of the different exhibits. Maybe some of them will just have one paleontology exhibit, starting off in the Precambrian, finishing off pretty much in the modern. And we're going to have something similar, but it's going to be greatly expanded. So we're going to have entire floors. We could have entire wings. We could have entire buildings for just one period, and then absolutely jam-packed filled with all of the organisms and the fossils from then. What else do museums have? Well, they sometimes have special exhibitions. And again, that's something that we can have. We can have a huge exhibition hall and then fill it with, say, 1 month Cretaceous dinosaurs, the next month, as I said at the start, Great Oxidation Event. And so we can really change the museum quite often, change the content, show different things, all using the materials that museums actually have digitized.
And presumably we'd work with researchers, experts in various different things to put those special exhibitions together.
Yep, indeed. We'll get onto that in a bit, because that's an important part of the whole ethos about the museum. But other things that museums have, they have collection stores and prep labs. So collection stores is just kind of like their library of specimens. So even though we are entirely limitless in the size of this museum, we can't really show everything, all of the fossils that the world has. It's just impossible. It'd be absolutely enormous. And you'd spend like a month just walking around, say, like the trilobites. So we'll show the best that of every museum, but then also have the rest of the stuff, which is searchable. You can go and have a look at whole lists of specimens and go and have a look at their pictures. So everything's included. We just show the best of the stuff.
So it's actually just like sort of a real museum, really. The collection stores are actually just outside my office. There are cases and cases and cases of fossils that, you know, you could never get through all of them. But they switch them out onto exhibit, sort of bring some back in, and it's constant rotation. But you can access the information for all of those fossils. So I guess it'll be very similar to that. So you've kind of, yeah, you've got those collections. Will we also, I think you mentioned prep labs. Are we going to have that as well?
Yeah, so if you go into a regular museum, the things that you won't see are kind of like the collection stores and the prep labs. So here there's all the work that goes on to clean, expose and conserve the fossils. And you don't get to see any of that. So what we're going to do is film a lot of the work that goes on, film the techniques, film someone actually doing the work, exposing the fossil, using acids, using sand abrasion and all of that stuff. You don't get to see that, but we can have all of that technology, all of that equipment inside of the museum, because all we have to do is draw it. We don't have to buy it. And so things like imaging suites, so we can have an SEM, we can even have our own synchrotron inside of this museum, show you the kind of things that goes on. We don't have to buy any of it. It's brilliant.
So is all this stuff just sort of going to be presented, or will there be kind of explanations or kind of education tools, that kind of thing as well?
The multimedia isn't just going to pop up. You're not just going to walk over to an exhibit and just be presented with a gallery of pictures and stuff. We're going to have a lot of text as well prepared for that material. So for ichthyosaurs, for example, you don't just get 20 pictures of ichthyosaurs and a load of specimen information. You get an actual museum display that tells you about them, tells you perhaps about the convergent evolution with dolphins and all of that kind of stuff. And then the educational side of things, we're going to have an education suite. So if you, I know that my local museum, when I was back in Manchester, I'd always go and be walking around, and you'd get to the top floor and there was a load of education rooms. These were always closed. There was no one ever in them. And I always wondered, like, what were these rooms for? And it's just for, I guess, when schools go there and they teach about all paleontology and the kind of stuff that the museum does. But we're going to have an education suite that's permanently open for everyone. And if you are a student and if you are a teacher, there you can go in and hopefully say what curriculum you're using, what syllabus you're using, and have the museum present you all of the multimedia that's relevant for your course. So that is where it becomes an educational resource as well.
That sounds really useful.
Yeah, and we've been speaking to a lot of people in education, educational bodies and stuff like that, who have really said that this is the kind of things that they want. But we'll get to that in a bit, the whole education bit. Other things that can be educational, we're going to have a lecture theatre. So if you imagine all of the live streaming and conference recording that we do for Paleocast already, we're going to live stream the Palace conference in December. So that's coming up. We're going to be able to present that in a lecture theatre. It's nothing different, but it's something that's just fun. You can go along and watch a talk be broadcast live from within the museum. We bring the lectures to you, so they'll always be available for you to go and watch. You just have to wander into the lecture theatre. And then on the less serious side of things, we can also show videos there. We can have a cinema. We can show The Lost World, which was the first ever paleontology film, really, I think. And that's public license. So let's have a cinema. Let's show trailers for paleontological films and games, computer games. We can have those in as well. We've been talking to some computer game producers. So we're going to have an arcade in the museum, so you can go and play paleontological games. It's crazy. We're just coming up with so many different things that we can put in there. Another thing that I thought of was have an art gallery. So we have our PaleoCast art competition. Why not have an entire art gallery to show off some of the best paleo art? This whole virtual natural history museum is just a way of sharing paleontological multimedia, any sort, and we can pull it in and hopefully make it fun to browse.
So I guess as well, because it's constantly updatable, if there are things that people want or they would find useful, they're interested in having, then they can get in touch with us and we can see what we can do.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's completely limitless in scope. There's no size limits. There's no cost in developing new rooms. If we want to put an entire new wing on the building, we can just do that. We can just code it in. There's no reason why we can't have any sort of thing in the museum, within reason. But if it displays multimedia, we can have it in.
So speaking of people requesting things that would be useful for them, is this actually a resource that people have asked for? How did you kind of decide to go forward with this?
Well, as I said at the start, it all came from the Paleo 101 project that never really took off. And that was multimedia sharing for the use of teachers and students in school. And this was something that was requested as long ago as 2012 by the Earth Science Teachers Association of the UK. And they wrote a letter, an open letter to the paleontological community, which they published in the Paleontological Association newsletter. And what they asked for is help in getting open access images of fossils and resources, games, activities that they can use in their classrooms. So a lot of the time, if you want to use, say, like a picture of a reconstruction of an organism, a lot of the times you'd have to go off, you'd find that, you'd have to find something that is licensed for you to be able to use it, to modify it. And a lot of the times, materials are held under licenses that prevent you from doing that. And so they were asking for help from paleontologists to source this kind of multimedia that they're able to use. And so this whole thing is intended to just share multimedia with the public. And the teachers and students, we're going to be able to provide them with the multimedia that helps with their studies.
So it's really fulfilling a need that had been identified by the people that will be the ones, sort of the main audience for using this thing.
Well, that was the original idea, but then I got so carried away with it that I just thought, why not make it available for everyone to use? If we make it so that it's enjoyable for students and teachers, why not? Why can't anyone enjoy this? And so it'd be brilliant to educate everyone as well through it, not just the people who are actually studying paleontology, but anyone who's interested.
Sure. So between the PaleoCast team, we have a relatively wide range of expertise, but not wide enough to accurately present information for an entire museum. Where are we going to get all the details from?
Yeah, so one of the very first things that we did for PaleoCast is we went to the BGS, the big museum that has no public front, and we tried to film a load of videos ourselves to present as the resources for these teachers to the ESTA, Science Teachers Association. And we did such a bad job of it. I mean, I've still got the recordings and they're never going to see the light of day. I couldn't believe how hard it is to actually sit down and talk about fossils. And so I like to think of paleontology as basically biology times by history seen through the context of geology with elements of chemistry and physics and engineering and everything. It's basically all of science brought into one. And nobody, no single person can know enough to be able to present that kind of accurate information. So what we're going to do is work with the paleontological community to build this museum and to make sure that everything that we're presenting is correct. So we're going to go to, say, like think of a group of animals, Dave. This is why I can't do it, because I can't even think of a group of fossilized organisms. So we can go to the echinoderm expert and say, could you write us a piece about echinoderms? Tell us about what they were doing, say, in the Devonian period, and what they were looking at, what they were looking like. Why is this specimen important? Why are we displaying this in the museum? What is the significance of this one opposed to that one? And you can only get that kind of information from the experts. And so that's something that our museum is going to have that other real museums don't have as well. We're going to try and bring in the whole paleontological community to make this the most accurate and up-to-date museum that there is.
So it will be continuously updated with sort of the latest research information, basically.
Yeah, but in an accessible, I'd hope so. Within reason, we can't keep it permanently up-to-date, but hopefully it's going to be more up-to-date than, say, like the museums that you go and actually physically visit, because we don't have to change the whole layout of the museum physically. We don't have to get big displays printed and all of that stuff. We can just do it all digitally. And I think that's the real advantage of having a digital opposed to a physical museum.
Yeah, I guess to put that in context, as I think I've mentioned possibly on PaleoCast before, the Smithsonian redoing their paleontology exhibit takes 5 years, and it's a huge project. So they'll be really up to date at the end of that, but it's probably much easier on a website to do things, mm-hmm. to switch stuff around.
Yeah, it'd be just as quick as copy paste. And then we've got...
that's all we'll be doing, copy paste.
Yeah. And it's an important thing to note as well that we aren't trying to do the education side of things by ourselves as well. I think that it's really important to be able to work with educators to be able to produce something that's useful for teachers and students. So I've got a list of all the UK's curriculum, which is where I'm initially targeting these resources. And I could quite easily try and bring together a few pictures that correspond to points of this curriculum. But what we're trying to do is work with the educators to produce something that's useful for them. So we're working with the Earth Science Teachers Association. We're also working with PALAS. We've got Dr. Ruth Richards, who's a principal examiner for one of the curricula in the UK. So it's not just us trying to give something to the teachers, here, we think this will be useful for you. We're working with them. We're working with the people who produce the curriculum to provide things that correspond to points in that curriculum. So hopefully by the end of it, we've got something that's entertaining as well as educational.
Okay, so I guess the important question sounds like it might be quite expensive, obviously. We're doing this voluntarily, but presumably website building and hosting and things costs money. Where are we getting funding?
So funding this website is quite expensive because there's no other website quite like this. I mean, it's a computer game that you just type in the website and then we'll pop up a computer game. And that's just the front end of things. That's the user interface. We've got to get the pixel art all done. We've got to get the museum all laid out. We've got to get how it all operates sorted. But then on the back end, we've got to have a sophisticated database system that pulls in the information, lets us arrange it wherever we want, lets us add in text and metadata and all of that stuff. So it's a really, really big technological project. And so it's pretty expensive for that reason. But we have got a... I was going to say the majority. It's technically true. We've got half of the funds sorted. So we've got half of the money from the Paleontological Association, which is absolutely fantastic of them to provide. And then we've got all of our hosting costs covered by the Geologists Association and their Curry Fund. So we've still got some money to find, and we're going to put that to crowdfunding, which is why we're talking to you, of course. You are audience. There are very few funds that we could apply for that would go for this kind of thing. So we've a lot of funds are set up for public outreach would be in the realms of like 500 quid. And so it's hard to apply for like 20 of these or however many to be able to get the whole funds covered to say like, thank you. Well, here's the application. Please, can you wait until we've got replies from these other 20 applications before we properly accept it and we go ahead with the project? So it's all conditional and stuff, and funding bodies don't like that. So we've had a real hard time with it. And then the other side of things, there's projects that are like for £100,000 that we can't get because a project doesn't fall within that very specific criteria of theirs. So it's hard to say like, hey, we're going to build a 3D museum. There's no 3D museum funding bodies out there. So it's been a bit of a nightmare, and it's taken like 1.5 years to get to this stage where we've been to all of the funding bodies and had replies from them and got a lot of the costs covered, but still just have to get over that finishing line. So that's where this crowdfunding is going, because I really, really believe in this project. I believe in the benefit that it's going to bring. I believe in the how much fun it's going to be. I mean, hopefully one thing you're going to get is like how enthused I am about the project. And I think it's just going to be the absolute best thing. And hopefully you guys will see the benefits and see how much fun it could be, and then chip in to get some cool stuff back as well.
What cool stuff?
Well, there's you with crowdfunding, so you get a lot of let's use Kickstarter. You get Kickstarter reward tiers. So if you contribute X amount of money, you can get something in return. So normally this is like, hey, thanks very much, you get a thank you letter for say like $2, you get maybe a poster print for $20 and stuff. So we're going to have like some of the usual reward tiers that you get with most other campaigns, but there's a load of really, really, really cool stuff that you can get if you contribute to this project. And one of the things that I'm most excited about, I would love to have this if I wasn't already in the museum, is that you can, if you donate, you can get residency in the museum. So we actually have a little computer game you who lives inside of the museum, who pops up, who's running around looking at all of the specimens for all eternity. You appear inside of the museum, inside of the computer game. There you are with your name on it. And I would love that. Getting it anyway. So, and then other things we can do is kind of like sponsor a specimen, for example. So like if you've ever been to the zoo and you've seen like the tiger cage, and then you see a little printed off thing of all the names of people who sponsored a tiger, we can have that. You can sponsor your favorite fossil. You can sponsor Tyrannosaurus. You can sponsor Archaeopteryx. You can sponsor an Asdarchid, seeing as we've got so many pterosaur fans after Liz's episode. So there's that. And then we can also curate an exhibition. So we've got our temporary exhibitions that pop up like real museums. Why don't you create an entire exhibition on what you love? Why don't we have a chasmotaspidid exhibition? I know I would love that. We can show everyone in the world just how good chasmotaspidids are. And there's all things like that, that ways in which you can get involved in what actually appears in the museum, and therefore like make it your own in a way. You can be in it.
So for people who, probably a lot of people have heard of crowdfunding in Kickstarter and stuff already, but for those who haven't, if you go, you can check out the Kickstarter website and see the kinds of things that people have up there, the kinds of rewards you get, basically just the way that it works if you're interested. And one thing that you might see if you go look at that is that people usually have a target for how much funding they want to try and generate. And then if you end up with more, you get stretch goals. So what are our possible stretch goals going to be with this?
There's a lot that I would like to, I was going to say have in the museum. That isn't technically true, I guess. Have outside of the museum. So one of the big things that I wanted was to be able to incorporate field trips. So you go into the Silurian period floor, have a look at all the Silurian fossils, but then step in a little time machine and go back to the Silurian and have a walk about there and see all of the fossils that were fossilized now brought back to life in computer game form, and have kind of like little orthocones floating around and crinoids floating about as well, and go and have a look at those. Like, it's entirely possible. Everything in this computer game we can do. There's no reason why we have to strictly adhere to the laws of physics. We can go back in time and have a look at all this stuff. And then there's also a lot of things with, on the serious side, localization and languages. So we're initially aiming it for the curriculum of the UK, and that's just because that's what we're familiar with and that's who our contacts are. But there's a lot of overlap between the national curricula of a lot of the countries. And so if we get the overfunding, we can stretch out the number of curricula to which we're able to provide multimedia for. So like, say you're in Australia, you can have a look at all of the multimedia that relates to the Australian curriculum. And then hopefully we can add in different languages as well. So if we get people to translate, it's going to be a big ask, seeing as we've got so much material. But if we can get people to get that translated for us, that's something we'd want to do. So like into Chinese, into Portuguese, into Spanish, French, German. So there's things as well that aren't strictly necessary, but it would be great to have them in. So an original chiptune soundtrack, so kind of like computer game music, but each period has its own theme tune and really creates a different atmosphere for every period. And that's something that I'd really like to have in. And maybe a shop as well, where we can sell books and other materials, hammers and all of that stuff. It'd be great to have that in, just like a real natural history museum.
So all these things are possible, but they might require a little bit more funding.
It depends on the reception. If people want this, if people think this is a great idea, then we can look at adding them in, depending on how much we actually get for the project. I think the project is brilliant on its own. This would make it better.
Right. Well, it all sounds really exciting. You're obviously very excited about
it. I'm really excited.
I'm
mostly excited that I did a reasonable job of being interviewed. And it wasn't.
That's what you'd like to think.
Yeah, in my head right now, it didn't go as awkwardly as I thought it'd go.
I think it was all right.
Ah, good. Good.
Have we decided when our campaign will go live yet?
So the campaign will hopefully go live on the 1st of January. Early January, I'm aiming for.
Okay, so the beginning of 2016.
Yeah, so there's another month to wait. So this hopefully will come out on the 1st of December, and then the Kickstarter will go on the 1st of January. So this is really to let everyone know what we're doing and why we're doing it before the campaign launches. So it's kind of like a pre-Kickstarter campaign.
All right, Great. Well, thank you very much for running through all that.
And thank you to anyone who contributes in any way, shape or form. I mean, it doesn't have to be money. It could be just giving us a shout out to whoever. It could just be just really supporting and saying, hey, I think this is a good idea. Hey, why don't you put this into the museum? Anything that you can contribute would be greatly appreciated, because I really want to see this museum open.
Okay, great. Thanks, Dave. And thanks, everyone, for listening. As Dave said, any feedback that you have, any thoughts that you have, are you really into this idea? Are there things that you particularly like to see? Just let us know. This is for our audience, so we want to hear back from you about what all your thoughts are on this project. And yeah, look out for the crowdfunding campaign when it goes up early next year.
Thank you very much.
Paleocast was brought to you by Dave Marshall with Joe Keating, Laura Soule and Liz Martin. It was made possible by funding from the Paleontological Society and the Paleontological Association, with music supplied by the Ocean Collective. Please visit paleocast.com for the supplementary material for this episode and for our archive of past programmes. Subscribe to our Twitter feed at Paleocast and like us at facebook.com/paleocast to get all the latest news.